probably like any industry, there'd be some similarities that pretty much everybody follows. So one example would be on their breeding farm where they incubate the eggs, their incubators are modeled on Australian incubators. And the farmer that was showing us around actually said that. Someone asked him about the model for his incubator, and he said, oh, I got it from Australia. So there is certainly some already been quite a bit of transfer of husbandry and technology.
The species of crocodile in Thailand is the Simensis. Here we have the saltwater croc. So are they quite similar to breed in captivity?
I don't know that for sure. In Australia, they get about half of their eggs from egg ranching, so they come from wild nests, and about half of them from the breeders they have at their farms. In Thailand, there are no wild Siamensis. They are all in farms, so that every one of their eggs comes from breeding. And according to them, they have about 80% success in achieving clutches from breeding crocodiles. So if that's true, Siamensis are easier to breed in captivity than saltwater crocodiles.
So what about the differences? You were saying earlier that here, when it comes to water control, and you've got to have very clear water. But when you were over in Thailand, that wasn't the case for the crocs.
Here, there's a huge emphasis on keeping your pens absolutely sparkling clean. They use disinfection every time they clean the pen. And they clean them right after they feed them. They clean out the pen the next day. So the crocs are kept in very clean conditions. In Thailand, and I asked one of the farmers, how often do you clean your pens? Because the water looked kind of murky. And he told me, whenever it looks dirty. And I said, well, how often is that? And he said, oh, about once a month. But despite that, the crocodiles looked fantastic and they looked stress-free. So there's a big difference. I don't know how they're getting away with it in Thailand, but yeah.
If that's the case, then I would assume a lot of money in Australia is spent keeping the staff up who can constantly do that water cleaning. Is that a potential way the industry could start to save a little bit of money if overseas you have seen it can operate not with as much focus on that clean water?
That's a possibility. They have four crocodile farms. They kind of run as a collective, and on those four farms there would be at least about 30,000 crocodiles. And he said he had four staff, which was shocking, but he's probably getting away with that because he's not doing as much cleaning. But the caveat is that I don't know what their ultimate skin quality is. And so here in Australia, they're producing the best skins in the world for the high-end crocodile leather industry. And they need to have absolutely blemish-free skins. So I suspect that's why they've gone the way of having very clean water. They absolutely don't want any skin infections or minor scratches to become infected and so on. So I would be very hesitant to immediately transfer that knowledge that, oh, it's okay if you have dirty pens to Australia, because I don't know whether the Thailand farms are achieving the same skin quality as they are here in Australia.
I'm here with Kathy Shilton. She's the senior veterinary pathologist at the Berrima Vet Lab. Kathy, I understand as well that a lot of these croc farmers in Thailand are actually ex-chicken farmers.
Well, yeah, at least the ones we visited, and it became kind of obvious, like they really knew what they were doing, and they had the biosecurity aspect down. So we visited the four farms, and they ran their farms as a closed system. So they said they knew that other farmers sometimes would, you know, they'd need some more hatchlings or they'd need some more growers. They would buy some crocodiles from another farm, bring them in to their own farm, and this farm absolutely wouldn't do that because they understood that mixing stock from different farms would only cause them disease problems. They used all-in, all-out type of husbandry where they would rear up the crocs in one pen and then completely empty that pen, and just maintain a closed system, which is good farming practice. And I think they got a lot of their know-how from chicken farming.
That's interesting. So there's a lot of similarities, I guess, then in stringent biosecurity control.
Yeah, I mean, it is farming, and you're raising animals at higher densities than you would normally raise them, and you have to make concessions and do husbandry practices to manage that.
With all this wastewater you were talking about, what happens to it? Are they regulated as to how they get rid of that water?
Oh, it was really interesting. The one farm showed us, he was quite proud of it, an elaborate system of ponds. They were very community-minded, and he maintained a series of ponds where if one of the locals didn't want his wastewater, which would be actually quite good fertilizer and nutrient-rich, if they didn't want his wastewater for, say, on their sugarcane field, he would put it into a system of ponds, and he actually bought a mixture, a sort of microbial mixture, to put in with the water so that you and leave it there until it became clear and it was nice enough to actually be pumped back into the local creek. And I asked about regulations and so on, and really he was doing it because he was community minded, and he said the community would not be as favorable towards his business if he was pumping nasty water back in the creek, which they use for washing and so on.
You just mentioned cane farmers there. So farmers in the region are interested in buying or getting that wastewater and using it for their crop.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said sometimes the cane farmers will actually ask for his water to spray on their crop as fertilizer, so it'd be quite nutrient-rich after 100 crocodiles have been swimming around in it for a month.
Kathy Shilton from the Berrima Vet Lab, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.